Hi, this is Aaron Newcomb, and on this episode of Floss Weekly, Dan Lynch joins me to talk to Simon Anderson about OpenStack. Can you believe OpenStack turned 5 years old? Happy birthday! It's coming up right now on Floss Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Aaron Newcomb and Dan Lynch, episode 348, recorded on August 5th, 2015. OpenStack turns 5 years old. This episode is brought to you by DigitalOcean. Simple and fast cloud hosting built for developers. Deploy an SSD cloud server in 55 seconds. Try it free today. Visit DigitalOcean.com, and once you sign up, be sure to enter the promo code FLOSS in the billing section for a $10 credit. And by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for the right payments API, check out the Braintree V.0 SDK. With one simple integration, you get every way to pay. To learn more and to try out the sandbox, go to braintreepayments.com/floss. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show where we talk about open source projects, the small and the big. And today we certainly got a big one to talk about. We'll get to that in just a minute, but it's going to be exciting, to say the least. I know you're really going to enjoy it. But before we get into that, let me bring on my lovely co-host, Dan Lynch. Dan, how's it going?
Hey, good. Anytime I get described as lovely, that's fine with me. It's good to speak to you. It's been a while since we've kind of done a show together.
It has been a while. Yeah, absolutely. For whatever reason, you know, we all kind of, of course, Randall's usually the host. He's not here today. He's on a cruise. He's in Iceland, I think. I got a note from him. He said the weather's just awful. I forget. I think he said
Iceland?
This is like
never.
Yeah, I know. Can you believe it? I think he said this was his 77th cruise that he's been on. So he's just I can't even imagine. I've never even been on a cruise. But he's enjoying himself, except for the weather. And he sends his regrets that he can't be here and his greetings to everybody that's watching the show. I'm sure he'll be watching later. It's been a while since we've been on together because we kind of rotate. So Randall's usually hosting, and then we kind of rotate the co-host positions among several of us. And then so we don't get to see each other. The co-hosts usually don't get to talk to each other as much, although I did get to talk to Guillermo, who was up here for a conference a few weeks ago, and I was down in Silicon Valley at work, and he was down there, and so I got to stop in and chat with him for about half an hour at his hotel. We were both really busy, so it's just like, oh yeah, just come over. It's like, okay. But it was great to meet him in person because I had never met him in person before, so it's always
nice. Did you
talk
about open source projects, or was it just a general chat?
You know, we did. We actually did.
You did?
We talked a lot about we're both makers. We like to make things, and so you know, I think the other part of the chat was just talking about the different projects we're working on and stuff like that. So it was fun. What's up with you though? What's new with you?
Good. Yeah, I'm getting ready to do another OgCamp this year. That's just things are emerging right now. So we're going to be doing one at the end of October, but I haven't actually released the tickets yet. People keep asking me when the tickets are going to be available. But for anyone who doesn't know, if you've listened to this show for a while or watched it for a while, you'll be aware every year around this time I kind of start talking about it. But it's a big open source free software and free culture conference that we run here in the UK. And it's the largest one in the UK, so it should be good. It's going to be Halloween weekend, so we're thinking of a Halloween theme. I don't know, maybe we can do something makery around zombies or vampires or something.
Just go out and buy a bunch of EL wire and let people go crazy. That's always fun. That little glowing wire. It just takes a couple batteries and you can wrap it on your head or sew it into a shirt or a costume or something like that. It'll be a lot of fun. I'd love to come sometime. I know you've been doing that for how many years now?
Six, 7 years now.
This is
our seventh event.
That's awesome.
It's always good fun. So I may have to pick your brains about some of the she was suggesting there, and maker stuff, because we're going to have a strong maker element this year. We're kind of talking to people right now about Raspberry Pi stuff, yep. And obviously got to have Raspberry Pi stuff. Arduino is all the usual suspects, I think.
Right. Are you at the scale now where you could actually get Eben to come up, down, or I don't know, sideways, whichever way he is in relation to you?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean, we had Pete Lomas came last time. He's nice. He's the guy who designed the hardware. So for anyone who doesn't know about, well, obviously you know what Raspberry Pi is if you're listening to this show, but do you know what I mean? How it works, basically, Eben was the guy with the idea, and when he needed the PCB to be made and designed and made, it was a guy called Pete Lomas who designed it, and he came and brought about 300 Raspberry Pis with him, and he sold them on a stall, and did really well out of it, yeah.
Nice. Mm-hmm. That's great. So we could probably just talk ourselves, but we actually have a show to do. We have a guest that we have to bring on in a minute. But before we bring on our guest and let you know, let's just give you a teaser of what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, OpenStack. So OpenStack turned 5, I think, last month in July. It seems like it's been around forever, but I guess it's only been 5 years. So it's exciting. So we wanted to do a show giving you an update about what's going on with OpenStack. It's always interesting to talk about OpenStack people have different opinions about it. So we're going to talk about that and hear what's going on with the project. Are you an OpenStack enthusiast, Dan?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I like it, and I've been following it. As you say, it doesn't seem like it's only been 5 years. It feels like it's been around a long time because it's already become like a big pillar that people build stuff on. So, it's an interesting one. But I think, it's really, I'm interested to find out more because I know there's been some developments lately and so on that I'm not quite up on. So that'll be good.
Yeah. We use OpenStack. In fact, we're an OpenStack partner. We wrote some things for it and have contributed. When I say we, I mean NetApp. That's the company I work for. We're doing a lot with OpenStack. We just released some new hardware that runs OpenStack really well, apparently. It's one of my, like, it's not my direct responsibility, but it's a couple rows down, a couple cubes over, so to speak, folks that have responsibility for marketing all those solutions we do for OpenStack. So I'm excited to talk about it as well. But before we do, we need to first talk about something else, which is our sponsor, DigitalOcean. And whether you're an experienced code warrior or just getting started, you need flexible, reliable, and affordable hosting. That's where DigitalOcean comes in. They provide developers with Droplets, which are virtual private servers that can be customized and deployed quickly to host websites, web apps, production applications, personal projects, virtual desktops, and almost anything else you can think of with full root access. Great for folks that watch this show, for sure. DigitalOcean is built for developers, and it's used by over 400,000 of them. You can deploy and configure your Droplets via streamlined control panel or simple API. You can choose your OS, so whether you're running Ubuntu or CentOS, Fedora, whatever it is you want to run, you can run it there. One-click install allows you to quickly deploy apps like Django, Docker, Drupal, etc. All servers are built on hex core machines with dedicated ECC RAM and RAID SSD storage. It's very important to keep things running quickly. Servers can have up to 20 CPUs, 64 gigabytes of RAM, and 640 gigabytes of SSD hard drive space. Highly scalable to meet the demands of a rapid growing application or business. And you can do auto backups and snapshots to let you easily clone, deploy, or resize Droplets as you grow. You can deploy servers in regions all over the world with gigabit speeds and 99.99% uptime. They have full-featured DNS management and it's easy to manage your domains or use dedicated IPs. They have a web console with HTML5 plus SSH, SFTP, KVM, VNC capability as well for virtual desktops. It's an extremely active community with large and detailed set of tutorials on the way. You can use your Droplets if you want to deploy Docker, set up a mail server. Well, they've got you covered with the tutorials. And it's easy to get started. You can deploy an SSD cloud server in as little as 55 seconds, really fast. So DigitalOcean has incredibly affordable, straightforward pricing. Servers start at only $5 per month. There's also hourly pricing available starting at less than a penny per hour. But we're going to make it easy for you to get started today and deploy your own SSD cloud server. That's right, for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com and create an account. Once you confirm your email and account information, just go to the billing section and enter the promo code FLOSS, F-L-O-S-S, for a free $10 credit. That's plenty to get started and explore what DigitalOcean can do. That's DigitalOcean.com. And once you sign up, enter the promo code F-L-O-S-S in the billing section for a $10 credit. And we thank them for their support of Floss Weekly. And now let's go ahead and bring on our guests. We have Simon Anderson today. Simon, are you there?
I am. Hello.
Excellent. Excellent. And where are you speaking to us from today?
So I'm in downtown Los Angeles. And as you can tell by my accent, I'm from a little bit further southwest of LA originally. And the view behind me is out of DreamHost's office here, right in the center of downtown, which is actually a pretty cool location for running a tech company, because we have developers and systems admins and tech support team members coming in from all over. You know, they come from east toward Harvey Mudd, where DreamHost was founded by four Harvey Mudd undergrads back in the late 90s, and North Pasadena, that whole sort of tech hub, mm-hmm. and then the West, Culver City and Santa Monica. So it's cool. It's a great location.
I've been hearing a lot on the news lately about Silicon Beach versus Silicon Valley. You know, the Silicon Beach is LA. LA is a new, hotspot for tech companies and startups and things. Do you find that that's true? I'm just, since we've got you on and, you've been involved in this for a while, do you find LA to be a good spot for tech startups?
It's really come along in the last 4 to 5 years. When I originally moved from Australia, I was up in the Valley for about 4 years, and then I moved down to join another hosting company, about 10 years ago to LA. And Silicon Beach at the time, I mean, it didn't really have the ecosystem of, venture capital and service providers and sort of, I guess, that cycle of engineers and programmers who'd been at one company, it had been sold and they moved on to the next. But now it's really come along. I mean, if you actually look at the raw data, I think in the first half of this year, there were about 7,500 startups founded in the broader LA area. And in the Valley, there were about 9,000 startups founded. So, wow. It's coming along strong. And, you've got big companies like Google and Facebook and so on setting up here as well and building teams here. So that really helps.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, go ahead, Dan. I thought I had the phone go. I was going to say, somebody get that phone.
That's right.
Excellent. So Simon, how long have you been involved with OpenStack then?
So I got involved about 8 months after it was founded in early 2011. And how it all happened is Sage Weil, who you've had on the show, who was the creator of Ceph, the distributed storage system. Sage, one of the four co-founders of DreamHost, and his co-founders were looking around for a person to kind of help take DreamHost forward. So they hired me in. Actually, there's a funny little story about that, but essentially I was elected by everyone on the DreamHost team at the time in a very traditional style election. They put up three candidates that they'd shortlisted and everyone got to meet them and interview them and so on. So, I had an open source beginning at DreamHost as well in terms of very open and democratic approach to me coming on board. And at the time, one of our big goals was, DreamHost was a shared and virtual private server hosting company with the two main products. And the team really didn't want to miss this next wave of cloud. In fact, a lot of us had seen it in the early days with Amazon getting going in 06, 07. And we really felt like, we needed to invest for the future and be a part of kind of building out open source cloud, which would be very, very much, a platform for the future. So at the time we looked around and we explored OpenStack. We looked at cloud.com, now CloudStack. We looked at Eucalyptus and so on. And we just felt that OpenStack, even though it was very early days, had the right mix of community that ultimately could sustain it over the long term. So we got involved. We started contributing code to the projects at the time, primarily Nova. And we basically made a decision that we were going to build our public cloud service, now Dream Compute, on top of OpenStack. And so it's been about 4 years. I've also been very involved at the governance and foundation level. So I was a part of the group that came together to, you know, figure out how to form the OpenStack Foundation, and sort of also work through, you know, how to organize the foundation with the board and then the technical community, and, you know, keep that kind of separation between governance and technical decision making around OpenStack. And I've been a board member of the foundation representing gold members since the board was established and the foundation was established in 2012. So very, very, you know, very heavily involved, but it's a big team effort here. You know, at DreamHost, we have around 12 to 13, you know, team members from a development and systems perspective that are working with OpenStack every day, contributing code to it, part of blueprinting, either, you know, evolutions of existing projects within the ecosystem or new projects. And it's been a fun ride. There's definitely been a bumpy ride. I think we were in very early, and you know so in many ways we've had to be a part of you know, solving some of the, you know, the challenges in as OpenStack scaled, even things like you know, being able to upgrade and do live upgrades from one version of OpenStack to the next and figuring out that whole operational sequence and so on. But we're pretty excited to be, you know, one of the early adopters and users and operators and pioneers in that regard.
Yeah, so talk just a little bit about your other endeavors. I mean, you're involved in several things. You mentioned Ceph, which I believe was bought by Red Hat, right?
Right.
I don't know. How many years ago was that? Like a year and a half?
A little over a year ago.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, look, my background is I have some venture capital in my background as well. That's what I was doing up in the Valley. And when, you know, when I got to DreamHost with Sage, there was already a small team that was really trying to figure out how to, you know, take Ceph from the distributed storage system from, you know, something that was in production in labs that was starting to be used by enterprise, but it was still fairly early days, and really make it, you know, one of the leading open source storage platforms, you know, for the cloud. And so we decided that one of the best ways to do that was to build a separate company around it. And we put together InkTank in late 2011. We actually launched it right at the end of 2011, you know, as its own independent company. And Sage and four or five engineers, you know, became the core of that company, along with Brian Bogensberger, who was the president. We made the president of the company and CEO. And from there, basically, you know, we looked at Red Hat. We looked at a lot of other, you know, open source businesses that had grown well, and we really tried to focus on keeping Ceph entirely open and building the capability. So over the following 2 years, we found that, you know, Ceph was just the right tool, particularly for block storage, open source block storage within OpenStack, and where there really wasn't that much in the way of alternatives that were an open source implementation. And so ultimately we were, you know, we'd raised some money and we were raising further money for Ceph. And we basically decided, you know, Red Hat came along and we were also looking at the product roadmap and how much work it would take to continue to, you know, carry Ceph forward along that product roadmap. And ultimately it was the best decision all around to, you know, to sell InkTank to Red Hat. And yeah. I know from experience, I mean, looking back and looking where, you know, where Ceph is now, it's continued to go great and be adopted broadly. Yahoo just announced that they're putting, you know, all of Flickr and Tumblr on a Ceph cluster that's 100 petabytes and so on. So it's great to see a, you know, something that was very, very much a, you know, a project that had been around for 5 or 6 years, but then really take off with, you know, with the explosion of cloud over the last 3-4 years.
Yeah. And, well, Ceph is great. I mean, we, you know, I was involved. I was at Sun when, you know, ZFS came out, the ZFS file system. And then, you know, there was Ceph and what's the other, Gluster or whatever. And yeah, so there's all these things coming about. In fact, I wanted to, before I forget to mention, if you want to know more about Ceph, you can go back and listen to the interview that I did with Sage. I was probably a year and a half ago, I want to say. Right. Where we talked all about it. And so, but anyway, I'm a storage guy. So that's really interesting to me. So I at least had to ask about it when we're talking about your background and what you're doing. And then also, just real quickly, wanted to mention DreamHost as well. And maybe you can talk a little bit about what DreamHost does, because you're involved in all of these different projects. I find it interesting. You've got a lot of different aspects to look at. You know, it's kind of like a lot of different lenses to look through to as you're examining OpenStack and the guidance there. But talk just real briefly about DreamHost as well.
Sure. So at DreamHost, we serve about 400,000 entrepreneurs and developers and worldwide. And what that means is everyone from an individual who just wants to get going on the web and wants a blog or website. And, you know, we have one-click installs of common applications like WordPress, you know, Drupal, Joomla. We're actually one of the biggest WordPress hosts in the world right now in terms of, I think we have about over a million installs of WordPress on our platform. And on the cloud side of things, we wanted to ensure that we were serving this next generation of developers with a very affordable, full-featured cloud. So we developed initially, actually much like Amazon in many ways, we developed our object storage service first, which is Dream Objects. It now has about 10,000 users and petabytes of storage, and being used for everything from, you know, backup to serving web pages and applications, you know, very similar to Amazon's S3 service. And then we also developed Dream Compute, which is based on OpenStack, utilizes OpenStack, uses Ceph for block storage. And Dream Compute's really designed to be for that developer who may be in, you know, maybe an international and wants a very affordable way to get cloud resources and, you know, for $10 a month and up. And right now we offer, we will be offering full utility pricing as well, you know, as another option. But interestingly, we're finding that a lot of our target customers, they like the certainty of, you know, a very affordable price for a bucket of resources, a quota of resources that are, you know, world-class and so on. So, so, you know, DreamHost, we're an independent company, and we really like that position. We're not really beholden to anyone. We own the company ourselves, the team and the founders. And, you know, we're really committed to the long game. So you'll see a number of announcements coming out, you know, over the next year to 2 years that show us, you know, continuing to grow and kind of be relevant in the cloud space.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, go ahead. Yeah.
So all of that, you know, we're still in the intro to this, but this is all leading to an important question before we start talking about OpenStack. Can you believe it? The reason I wanted to get that background and ask you about all those things is because in all of those projects, the common denominator is open source. There's a right. lot of open source software that you're using, and projects that you've been involved with. And so that leads to the big question, the big reveal for this show, especially why. Open source. I mean, why are you using open source? Why are you involved? I mean, why not just go grab software from you know, Oracle or Microsoft or one of those people and use that to build DreamHost, for example?
Have we ever tried, you know, have you ever tried dealing with the pricing structures and so on? No. But look, I think it's evolved over the years. Early on, you know, DreamHost was really founded by, you know, with a mission to give access to this incredibly powerful new platform, the internet, and enable programmers to, you know, develop projects, websites, and so on. So it was kind of a way for the founders to do that and do it, you know, in a financially viable way. And then I think, you know, early on, the founders, you know, well before I got to DreamHost, just had this long-term vision that open source could well become not just about software development, but really more of a broader approach to solving big problems in the world, you know, in a much more collaborative and open way. And so, open source has really become that for us now, where it's not just about the fact that, you know, that we can utilize the code for free, because we actually, you know, contribute a lot in terms of code contributions back to pretty much every project that we're actively involved in. And so it's, you know, it's not as if you're really using something for free, but obviously we can extend it. We can customize the software. We're really not locked in. We can be much more agile in terms of how we, you know, how we utilize everything from OpenStack, I mean, Linux, obviously at the application layer, WordPress, and so on. So, so it's become something that became, has become a very good, you know, business decision for us overall. And, but I think what you're seeing now, and I think this is the big, you know, the big shift that's happening, that sometimes it's harder to see these shifts when you're in the middle of them. But OpenStack to me is a great example of this incredible shift where large companies are realizing that, you know, they can't field the number of developers or the you know, the number of smart architects to build something like a cloud platform alone. That open source is not just about software development, it's about a way of approaching building something, you know, incredibly large. And I think, look, it's been borrowed, you know, it's borrowed from the scientific community with, you know, projects like NASA projects where you have scientists coming together, like CERN, where I had the privilege of sort of going through the CERN facility last year in Switzerland, you know, 5,000 scientists coming together from all around the world to work on a specific problem. And so big picture, I think that's, you know, that's our vision, which is we think that this is just going to be the way that software is developed, the way that, you know, a combination of hardware and software is designed, you know, to optimize services. And there's just so many examples of it out there, everything from Android, of course, to, you know, to the continued evolution of operating systems, to the cloud, and then now applications. I mean, WordPress itself is used by, you know, 30%, 35% of all websites worldwide right now as a content management system, and it's open source. So we're just big fans of the model, and we think you build better software if you approach things in a truly open source fashion.
Excellent. Excellent answer. That's what we want to hear. So now let's go ahead and jump into a little bit more to actual OpenStack and what's going on and what's different. And, you know, it's the 5-year anniversary, which is just amazing to me, especially given how much development and change there's been over that 5 years. I mean, if you look at it compared to other projects, just an incredible amount of work from where it started to where it's at now. It's huge, and driving consistent and regular releases with new features all the time. That's my take on it. I think it's incredible to look at. And I know that a lot of people are jumping in and getting involved because people want to use it. But I'm going to let you answer the question. I mean, what's changed? You know, what's different from when you got involved? What's changed over the last 5 years?
So I think, you know, one of the big themes is that the core of OpenStack, which is, you know, compute storage networking, Nova, and then the Cinder project, which enables you to use now up to 80 different backend storage options, you know, including NetApp, Aaron, where you are, you know, and then the networking project is really getting to a level of stability and upgrade ability that the community's been able to focus on, you know, the next layer of software that drives real usage and utility for developers and enterprise. So, you know, there's still a long way to go. There's always going to be, bugs and issues even in core. But I think, you know, the community has been able to strengthen the core with a lot of involvement, actually, from companies that have been very good at sort of helping that evolution in the evolution of Linux. So, you know, companies like Intel, IBM, and so on that you know, really practice hardening software for enterprise grade reliability. So the core now is it's very upgradable. I mean, we just did an upgrade to the Kilo release, actually to the Juno release recently, and basically it went very smoothly. So the core is stable and solid. And now, you know, there's projects like Magnum, which is the container service, the API service that, you know, will enable container technologies like Docker and Kubernetes and so on to be managed and deployed, you know, on either bare metal or VMs and so on, using the OpenStack framework. And you've got new projects like Murano, which is the which is basically the application catalog. So it's the community application catalog that enables not only, you know, if you're a service provider like us, you can have any number of applications in there that are available for one-click install, and so on. And then, you know, you've got other projects like Trove for databases as a service that have really been, you know, strengthening and going well over the last year, and so on. So it's interesting. All of this is basically kind of wrapped up in this concept, which has been called Big Tent. And originally, I think, you know, in the first few years of the foundation and OpenStack, there was this sort of gnashing of teeth around, you know, what is OpenStack? What is the core of OpenStack? And there was a whole process whereby additional open source projects or extensions could, you know, move from being out in the wild to being an incubated project and then to being sort of accepted into the core of OpenStack. And I think what the technical community found and the board found as well was that it was a number of steps that kind of in some ways created... it didn't necessarily mean that the best project would win out, or that there would be choice for users, particularly, you know, if choice was needed in any particular new project. So what we did with Big Tent, the community did with Big Tent, was basically sort of eliminate the incubation step, and say instead, look, that we're going to have a tightly defined core for OpenStack, which is now defined by a process called DevCore, which both the technical committee and the board are involved in updating every few months. It's a series of tests that basically tests either a distribution or, you know, a service provider implementation and verifies that it is OpenStack. It's using, you know, the core software and projects. And then, but then beyond that, there would be this Big Tent approach where many different new projects could flourish and grow and, you know, build momentum. And, you know, there's arguments for and against this approach, because, you know, an argument against would be that, you know, you don't have as much product management style effort being put into it. It's sort of like the Wild West to some degree, but I think the benefit at this stage, particularly given where OpenStack's at, where you know, it's still growing very fast, it's still in a very much an innovation cycle, not so much, you know, a big established known project in terms of, you know, we know what the boundaries are of it, there's still so much more to do, that I think it's a good approach for now. And that's part of the flexibility, I guess, of the OpenStack ecosystem. Is it really is a technically driven community. So even though I'm on the board along with 23 other board members from representing individuals, representing corporations that have sponsored OpenStack and really got involved from the early days, it's really the technical committee and the technical community that determines the direction, and the board can certainly weigh in and provide guidance or input, but it's the technical committee that drives a lot of those decisions. So we're pretty excited about these higher level services that are now getting built into OpenStack. And for example, right now we're not using Designate, which is the DNS service, which is being worked on actively right now. We're evaluating both Murano and Magnum, the app catalog and the containers API service. And so, the great thing for a user like us, like Dreamhost as well, is that, we've got this steady flow of options where instead of us having to develop the code ourselves entirely and maintain it for a particular value-added service or feature, the community is really stepping up and developing it. And I guess just to put all that in perspective, the last release of OpenStack, there were, I believe it was 1,500 to 1,600 active contributing developers who worked on it. And if you think of those numbers, and that's pretty much every 6 months, it's, the number of active contributing developers has gone up by 20 to 30%, over the last 4 years, 4 to 5 years. And it's pretty difficult for an individual company to field that number of developers on a single project at this point, no matter what the scale. So I think that's where OpenStack is really proving to be, an incredibly powerful option and movement and platform for companies like us and enterprise. And you're seeing it in the adoption as well. I mean, at the last summit, we had, there was BMW, there was, a number of new large companies that have deployed an OpenStack-based cloud, either for internal development or, for running live production applications. And the momentum continues.
I know there's a massive amount of momentum behind OpenStack right now, and it just seems to grow all the time. And one of the things I wanted to kind of ask about or discuss, I suppose, is I think a lot of people, particularly traditional kind of business people, would find it really hard to understand the fact that you've got all these competing companies, talking together about how to improve this product that they then go and try and sell to other people and compete against each other to sell. And it's kind of complicated. So I was curious about how that kind of dynamic affects things a little bit. Because I years ago was looking at the formation. I was kind of around a Red Hat conference or a summit at the time as they were starting to form the Open Virtualization Alliance and all that kind of stuff. Right. So I just wondered if you had any kind of opinions on how the business side of things, and how is it difficult sometimes to deal with these different interests who are maybe trying to push their agenda in some way?
I think it's a challenge for the community overall to be able to easily package OpenStack, if you'd like, for different use cases and different users and operators. And the reason it's a challenge is because it is an open source community. It's not as if we're going to come out with a, here's the exact reference architecture for this particular, if you have an e-commerce application that you want to run at scale, the next eBay or something like that, here's exactly what you should use. This is the underlying storage implementation backend. This is what you should use for networking, because there are different vendor choices that are in there. And so I think for the less sophisticated operator, or on the business side of enterprise, it can seem a little daunting, because there is a lot of choice. I mean, even though OpenStack is a unified cloud management platform, it offers a lot of choice. It offers choice of storage implementation, networking, and so on. It offers choice of do you want to run, you know, on bare metal and have OpenStack manage deploying to bare metal and configuring, you know, a bare metal server? Do you want to have it, you know, in a virtualized environment, and now containers as well? So I think it is a challenge, something that's very actively discussed, you know, at the board level and in the community at large. You know, how do we make OpenStack more and more consumable and easy to sort of get to step one and then step two? I personally think that ultimately, you know, there's going to be a few things that need to happen. That there's going to need to be continued work on enabling enterprise, small, even small to mid-sized business now to just try OpenStack and do it with a, you know, a fairly standard vanilla deployment. And so, you know, for example, most OpenStack implementations, you know, still use KVM as opposed to Xen for a hypervisor, even though you have that choice. So basically, you know, being a little bit more proactive about putting that out as being, look, start here. This is your basic implementation, which primarily uses open source software. And then, you know, make your choices from there, depending on what your workload is or what your, you know, what your cloud needs to be. And I think, look, the vendor, you know, there's always that, I guess, conspiracy theories, or, you know, there's always that worry that certain vendors are going to push their agenda unduly. The beauty of an open source community like this, though, is that, and I've seen it in the, you know, the Neutron project, the networking project, we've seen it in the Cinder project as well, that, you know, whenever any one vendor gets a little bit too far out and is, you know, trying to push their code upstream, and they've done, you know, they've developed the code without necessarily testing it against the, you know, sufficiently against, you know, the core code base, and they're finding, you know, and bugs are discovered and all that sort of thing, then the community, you know, it's a little bit like our immune system. It tends to reject and say, go back, try it again, do it again, you know. And so I think, look, I think that's why we are where we are, and it's taken 5 years, because it's not like you can force those things. That's the trade-off. It takes more time. But I've seen plenty of examples, you know, of patches being rejected and plugins being rejected or you know, knocked back and then basically told, look, come back again when you have code that's not going to, you know, destabilize the core code base and that sort of thing. So I'm definitely hopeful, but I think, look, I think the transparency and the openness is key, and that's where this is, you know, really a grand experiment in some ways, because I think I can't think of any. I mean, you guys have been in and around open source for years, and you know, as have I, but you know, in many ways, I hope I'm not biased, but I can't think of any community that really has this particular mix that OpenStack has, which is, you know, a very big independent, you know, user base and developer base, as well as lots of corporate interests who are all trying to, you know, hook into it and optimize OpenStack for, you know, for their particular subsystem and so on. But it's a dynamic and open environment, and it's moving very, very fast. So
is that something that's a challenge for you guys on the board to make sure that, I don't know, that the kind of the bigger companies or the ones who've got the most money and influence and so on? And I know there's been a little bit of controversy around likes of VMware coming out with their own implementation of OpenStack and all this kind of stuff. Is it difficult for you to make sure that the individuals and the smaller people get the same amount of, you know, time to have to say their piece and the same amount of influence as, say, somebody like a huge company with a lot of money who can, you know, just kind of stamp their feet and jump around or whatever?
Yeah, I think that's always a challenge. I think specifically the individuals who represent the large companies, for example, on the board and in the community, they're almost all open source people, you know, and open source minded people from those large companies. So the, you know, the good thing is that you definitely have individuals who really see themselves as, you know, as a an advocate for open source first, and then secondly, representing a larger company. So there's that. That's one very good thing about the community. You know, it's not like we have a lot of folks sitting around the table at the board level who, you know, are from the sales organization, or, you know, just driving, you know, really pushing for their own product. And then I think in the technical community side of things, there's actually a very healthy sort of respect for views, and no matter where they come from. And so I've, you know, seen a lot of interactions, whether it's at the summits where, you know, blueprints are developed and so on for, you know, for the next release. I've seen, you know, meeting rooms where there's a lot of respect for, you know, for the individual developer to speak up, or, you know, a developer who's not from a large company to really have a view. So I think that's very healthy. There's a strong culture of that within the community itself. And, you know, hopefully that is continued and maintained.
All right, great. So I know we've talked a lot about, you know, kind of what's been going on with OpenStack, and we want to definitely hear about what's coming up with OpenStack and some of the things that are changing. So maybe you can help us answer those questions in just a minute. But first, we do need to pause just to thank another sponsor. And in this case, it's Braintree. This episode is brought to you by Braintree, code for easy online payments. If you're building a mobile app and searching for a simple payment solution, that's definitely something you should check out. Check out Braintree. The Braintree V.0 SDK makes it easy to offer multiple mobile payment types. So you can start accepting PayPal, Apple Pay, Bitcoin, Venmo cards, and more, all with a single integration. So you can do things like simple, secure payments. You can integrate that into your website or your application in minutes. Developers, this is a developer crowd. Don't worry about taking days to integrate your payments with Braintree. It's done in minutes. They've made it really, really simple. Maybe you don't have time to do it yourself. You can call them and they'll handle the integration for you and walk through it with you. The Braintree code also supports Android, iOS, JavaScript clients, so they really got you covered. The SDK is in 7 languages, which is really important. They've done a lot of work on that. They cover .NET, Node.js, Java, Perl, PHP, Python, Ruby, pretty much whatever you're programming in these days. Braintree's got you covered and can implement payment solutions very easily. They have elegant code, clear documentation, and they can offer you a solution with only 10 lines, 10 lines of in-app code, which is fantastic. So definitely check out Braintree. They give you an easy way to accept multiple payment types with one integration, quick, knowledgeable developer support if you have questions. You can start accepting Apple Pay, PayPal, Bitcoin, Venmo cards, and whatever's next, all with a single integration. So with Braintree, V.0 SDK, one small snippet of code, and you're up and running in less than 10 minutes. To learn more, and for your first $50,000 of transaction fee-free, that's a lot of transactions, go to braintreepayments.com/floss. Once again, braintreepayments.com/floss. And we thank them so much for their support of Floss Weekly. All right, back to OpenStack. So so we talked a lot about, as I mentioned, a lot about the history of OpenStack, what's going on, I think, common maybe not complaints, but things that maybe put people off with a lot of companies getting involved and worrying about the code drifting away from the community and things like that. What's coming up? What are the next big things that are coming up for OpenStack? You know, at least as far as you can see, what are the plans?
Well, in terms of specific capabilities, like I mentioned a couple already, but you know, the DNS service is pretty interesting. I mean, right now as a host, you know, we have about 2 million domains that we manage, you know, and websites. And so we run our own DNS right now, which obviously we have to ensure is high performance and balanced across our data centers and, you know, and so on. So the DNS service designate is pretty interesting, certainly for us at DreamHost. And we're going to, you know, we're going to be helping move that forward and so on. Then there's also the shared file system, which is codenamed Manila. That's another project that's under development for the Liberty release. And, you know, right now at DreamHost, we don't have an immediate, you know, demand for that system. But I think that's a very interesting, you know, important project, which we'll build that out. And then the queuing service as well, which is codenamed Zakar, is another very actively developed new project that, you know, obviously will streamline operations for OpenStack users once it's mature and ready to go. And so there's, you know, as you can tell from these capabilities, a lot of it is about kind of, you know, building out OpenStack specific capabilities that are ready for the cloud, that where, you know, operators don't have to necessarily use old software or tool sets or proprietary software or tool sets, and instead can have the capability just built into OpenStack. So, you know, in some ways it's like, well, how exciting is all that? You know, but when you think about it, you know, a cloud ultimately is just IT infrastructure, you know, designed and architected a different way. And it offers incredible utility and agility and all those things. But essentially, you know, OpenStack as a mission to be the cloud, the open source cloud management platform, you know, we have to continue to build these additional capabilities in over time, and you know, that's part of the mission. So you know, for us, I think you know, specific to sort of DreamHost's experience, which can be useful, I think, you know, what we're finding, we're just about to you know, in a few months, it looks like, you know, in terms of timing, we've architected basically our next generation of Dream Compute, and the developments that have been, you know, built into OpenStack over the last year or so since we launched our Dream Compute version 1 architecture and so on, have really helped us with this next iteration to be able to build a super high performance cloud at, you know, a very cost effective, with a very cost effective approach. So I think, you know, that's a very practical example of where to next with OpenStack. I think you're going to hear more and more about performance. You're going to hear more and more about IOPS, you know, and guaranteed IOPS for the block storage, actual real world examples of that sort of thing. So it'll be less about is X company using OpenStack, and it will be more about how are they using OpenStack, what performance characteristics are they getting, you know, for their applications. And then I think, you know, that will lead more to more clarity, more case studies, examples, you know, whether they're from operators, enterprise, or the vendors themselves, that basically point to, look, you know, here's the best storage subsystem to use, or here's a great few options of storage subsystem that you can use, you know, with your cloud for these particular use cases, and so on. So that's what I'm excited about. I'm excited about the level of detail that I think is going to come out over the next year to 2 years around how people are using OpenStack, and that they're getting very high performance from it. That to me, that's the next big wave of sort of active interest. And I was actually just at a dinner last night here in Santa Monica, which was hosted by a systems integrator, and it's pretty interesting actually. You know, they've traditionally served operators and enterprise, you know, with hardware and helping make hardware choices. And this SI is entirely getting into you know, how do we play a role in helping, you know, you architect your OpenStack cloud and make hardware choices related to your OpenStack cloud and so on. So, you know, the OpenStack is forcing a very big change to the landscape. You know, by the way, you know, for networking, we use a big brand networking vendor for our border routers and so on. But, you know, we also experiment with the leading edge of networking options like Cumulus Networks and so on in the cloud. And that enables us to bring our costs down. It enables us to have, you know, our sysadmins who are used to administering a Linux server, they can also administer, you know, the Linux-based, you know, Cumulus switch at the top of the rack. We can hook in all our you know, telemetry and monitoring to that. So that's, to me, that, you know, it's going to be all about the operator and how are you using OpenStack in detail, and what sort of performance characteristics you're getting out of your cloud, to me, over the next year.
Yeah, I love to hear. And when you say we in those last couple statements, I think you were talking about DreamHost, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah, because you use OpenStack, of course, for DreamHost. So I just wanted to clarify there, because you're involved in so many projects, you got to make sure we know which one we're talking about. But I think that is interesting. I love to hear you talk about performance and about storage because you know, since I work for NetApp in my day job, you know, I love people hearing about that. It's good business for us, and we've certainly been following and working with OpenStack quite a bit.
I mean, I think the thing is that, you know, particularly, like, take NetApp as an example. The reality is that particularly in enterprise environments, I mean, you know, they're incredibly heterogeneous environments when it comes to everything from operating system to hypervisor to servers to, you know, storage and so on. So I think whenever something like OpenStack comes along, which is big and disruptive and transformational, there's a misconception that it means you're just throwing out, you know, what you have and you're replacing it with this new thing. Whereas really what's happening is OpenStack sort of enabling, much like virtualization did, you know, 10, 12, 13 years ago, when the true virtualization wave really took off, you know, around obviously VMware and so on. But, you know, what it does is it enables you to utilize what you have more flexibly for longer in more interesting ways, as much as it enables you to take advantage of new hardware and systems that might be coming along. So as an operator, you tend not to be so, you know, wedded to any particular vendor or system. You know, you just need to get the job done. And I think that's where OpenStack is offering a lot of choice. And so for operators that really know their stuff and operate cloud or hosting or infrastructure every day, the choice is not scary. It's just a matter of working through it.
Well, so that's a good point, and that's what I was just going to ask, is it does seem still tremendously complicated, though. I mean, is that something that you're trying to address? And maybe it's not, right? Because, you know, I've never deployed, you know, OpenStack myself, because I'm not in that position anymore. I used to be an admin, but I'm not anymore. But I've done it in the past, so I'm just kind of curious. I mean, from maybe a little bit of an outsider view looking in, it's like, oh, you've got all these different buckets of stuff that you got to worry about, and I'm going to deploy this, and yeah, it's all been kind of laid out for me and certified to work with each other and everything like that. But it still seems pretty complicated to lay out. So first of all, I guess the first question is that a misconception, number one? And number two, if it's not, then how is OpenStack dealing with that?
So, I don't think it's a misconception. I think OpenStack will always be complicated because it's solving a very big problem. And it, you know, it is a cloud management system. And as we know, I mean, essentially it's managing, it has the capability to manage all of your IT infrastructure ultimately. And so I think it is and always will be complicated. I think that there are now options for, you know, a user or an operator that kind of help on-ramp them. So, for example, you know, there's now a number of choices of sort of package distribution of OpenStack out there that does ease the burden, you know, for the, you know, for the operator in terms of implementing OpenStack. There's also, you know, obviously a number of companies around in the OpenStack ecosystem who do, you know, professional services and support around it, Mirantis and others, as well as the, you know, the Red Hats of the world. So, and the Canonicals and so on. So, so I think there's a lot of choice, and, you know, you can get the help you need. What we've found ourselves is that, I mean, we're obviously a very technical company with a lot of capabilities to, you know, to figure it out ourselves. But you know, we even, you know, we've leveraged support from Canonical. We've leveraged support, obviously, from, you know, from Inktank itself related to Ceph, and so on. So, you know, we've sort of spot leveraged professional services and support from other community partners. So, you know, I don't know whether I'm really sort of fully answering your question. There's not really a pithy answer to it, but I think the fact of the matter is, I think the misunderstanding with OpenStack is that people want it to be packaged software, and it's not packaged software. I mean, you know, you're talking about, if you want to run a cloud with hundreds or thousands of nodes, you know, whether they're, you know, separated out into hypervisors and storage nodes, or whether you have more of an integrated approach where they're both on the same server, it's, you know, it is complex software that is performing many functions and needs to do it all in a way where it's transparent to the end user, and, you know, their virtual machine's live, and if they want to spin up another one, they can spin it up in 30 seconds, and away you go. If they want to, you know, if they want to run containers, they can do that. If they want to launch a bare metal server, they can do that. So it's complex stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely complex, and I think it's really all about options, you know, providing those options, like you say, and there's certainly enough partners involved, you know, that if you do need help setting it up or getting it going, you know, there's plenty of people out there willing to help with that, and that's a good thing. I mean, you want people to kind of come to the table and support you, as opposed to having to perhaps pick between different closed source partners or closed source solutions to work with. At least that's my take on it.
Right.
Is that just brings goodness to the table, as opposed to, you know, having to choose between, oh, do I go with this, you know, open source thing, or do I go with this closed source thing that maybe you know, costs more, or whatever. There might be reasons you want to do that as more widely used or something like that. I think that OpenStack provides the foundation to go forward with an open source solution that you can be confident with. And I'm not trying to give a commercial for OpenStack at this point. I know it sounds like it. I'm really not. I just that's my take on OpenStack itself, is that it kind of is providing the foundation so that people can feel using it.
If you're running any IT at scale and you don't have either a member of your team or, you know, on the systems and engineering side, or, you know, if you're not involved in at least looking at OpenStack and experimenting with it and considering it for, you know, different environments, development environment, test environment, production environment for applications, I mean, I think you're going to lose a competitive advantage pretty quickly. Even if you're using, you know, big public clouds like Amazon or Google or Azure, or, you know, I mean, I think now is the time when there's so much change and transformation that it's very, very smart to allocate some of your team's time to be understanding OpenStack and learning it. Because basically, what it's going to save you as well as an operator is, you know, when all of a sudden the CIO comes along or whomever is the decision maker and says, you know, I need an OpenStack cloud in 3 months. You know, if you haven't done that groundwork to understand it and understand the different elements and know, you know, where you can get help and assistance and so on, you're going to be paying a lot of money for that cloud because you're going to have someone else build it for you and you know, and so on. So, and then look, there's lots of, you know, another example of a you know, another project that we're very heavily involved in. In fact, we created is Akanda, which takes the Neutron networking project and sort of simplifies a lot of aspects and orchestrates the networking, you know, to a greater degree than Neutron in the cloud. And so, you know, Akanda is a project that it was code that we developed originally about 2.5 years ago, because there wasn't anything else out there at the time that we felt was, you know, going to work for us. And so last year we, you know, decided to put some additional funding and you know, energy into it, and because it really was continuing to prove to be a very good alternative. So, you know, now Kanda is a thing. It is, you know, it's got a growing team. It's an open source project, 100% open source. So lots of other contributors, you know, really starting to get involved. And I think that's an example of, you know, the beauty of OpenStack, that you can have these other layers, whether it's open source or, you know, ultimately proprietary systems, that hook in, you know, to the foundation and provide a lot of capabilities, you know, beyond the foundation that, you know, that ultimately, you know, the operator needs. You know, we needed firewall, we needed load balancer, and so on. And, you know, we weren't able to get it through either the community or, we didn't, you know, the business model really wasn't there to get it through, you know, proprietary options at the time. So, it's cool. I mean, to me, I think the fact that OpenStack spawns another need, another project, and creates an opportunity for another open source sub project, is very, very cool.
It's good that it's generating all these new opportunities and stuff. And I'm afraid I am going to rudely cut in on you there, Simon. I apologize, but we are kind of running out of time a little bit. But I want to ask you, before we kind of wrap up and stuff, I mean, we've talked about a lot of stuff and we can probably talk for, God, hours longer than this, but unfortunately we only have a certain slot. But is there anything else that we haven't mentioned that you think our audience, you'd like to tell our audience about, bearing in mind that we are kind of slightly running out of time, if that's all right?
Absolutely. Well, keeping it short, I mean, I think Twit and Floss, you guys do a great job. I've watched, you know, your program for a long, long time. I mean, I think taking the time to, you know, to talk to folks, you know, like Sage, like myself, and a lot of the great people that you have on, and allowing the time where you can really sort of dig into the nuances of open source software and how the community is going, the project's going, is just really great. You know, I look at your schedule coming up. I'm excited about, you know, the next couple of weeks. I think you've got some, you know, you've got CoreOS coming on and so on. So good job. And thanks very much for, you know, having me on the show. And hopefully for the audience, it's been informative and they've been able to learn something. And you know, if anyone wants to hit me up on anything, my probably easiest is just through Twitter, which my Twitter handle is @DreamHostSimon.
Awesome. Awesome. Simon, thank you so much for being here today. I do apologize. As Dan said, we could probably go on for hours and dig into much more technical stuff. And we just don't have time because there's so much to talk about. you know, I think it's great. Congratulations on 5 years, and congratulate the board on our behalf as well for a great 5 years. We look forward to a lot more work with OpenStack, you know, in the coming years. It certainly seems like it's growing and not shrinking. So that's fantastic. I do want to ask you, before we wrap up, we usually do, you know, Randall always does these two questions. I'm just going to flip it up a little bit because sometimes change is a good thing, and ask you just a simple question, just like a little poll here, one person poll, which is which Linux distribution would you run at home? Would you be most likely to run at home?
So I would run – well, I do run Ubuntu, basically. I used to, because we were a Debian at DreamHost, we've been Debian for a long time, but then we've gone over to Ubuntu in the last couple of years. And then also, you know, I kind of have to say that. I mean, I know we sold Ink Tank to Red Hat and so on, but Mark Shuttleworth and Canonical, you know, have been big fans and supporters, and you know, I've really appreciated you know, what he's done to continue to kind of productize Linux and so on. And so, you know, I'm my heaviest usage is Ubuntu.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. Well, I think it's a good question to ask, given our audience. I don't know. We'll see if Randall slaps my hand or not for that one. But I thought it might be interesting to get people's get a different spin on things a little bit. Sometimes we have hardcore programmers on, and sometimes we don't. So I think it's just fun to mix it up a little bit. We'll see what happens.
And yeah, Dan, I'm definitely going to check out your event. It sounds
Yeah.
The only trouble is I can't come this year because at DreamHost every year we do a big Halloween party, and we allow all our team to invite friends, and we have about 500 people. And this year it's actually on Halloween. It's normally like on a Saturday before and after, but given Halloween falls on a Saturday, we've got a big party.
Just do it on a cruise ship and aim it in this direction, and then you'll be
there
fine.
There you go. That'll cover all the bases, because then Randall will join too, see?
Yeah, then Randall could join as well.
That's right, exactly. Iceland sounds fun. Yeah.
Bring your own life jacket.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, guys. I really appreciate the time.
Yeah, thank you so much, Simon. It was a pleasure having you today.
Great.
All right, so that's OpenStack. Man, exciting stuff going on. Dan, what do you think?
Yeah, really cool stuff. I mean, this as I said, I really wasn't joking when we could talk for hours about that kind of stuff. It feels as though it's becoming like the infrastructure of the web, if you know what I mean, to some degree. A lot of this stuff is kind of just what we build on top of nowadays, and we don't even think about it so much. So it's really nice to speak to someone who's kind of, you know, knows some of the inside track on the stuff that's going on there.
Yeah, definitely. And someone who has been involved in a lot of different projects as well. When you think about Ceph and DreamHost and things like that, I mean, it's, you know, Simon certainly had a lot of different perspective to offer. And that's kind of why I monopolized that aspect of his credentials a little bit, because I wanted to get his insight. You know, sometimes we talk, like I said, to the programmers or people like that, and it's like, oh, well, why did you write this code this way? And what about this feature? And then sometimes it's nice to get kind of a broader picture of open source community, and especially with a project like OpenStack that you know, I think is certainly growing and touching so many people's daily lives, you know, because, you know, admins out there, you know, being told, hey, let's go implement OpenStack, or let's evaluate OpenStack versus doing something else. So I think it's good to get that the big picture perspective sometimes as well.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of big picture perspective, we ought to talk about the big picture of Floss Weekly and look at some upcoming episodes that we have. How's that for a transition? On next week, August 12th, I'll be back, and we'll be talking about Core OS, which is a group of open source projects. It sounds like an operating system, and it is, but there's other pieces and parts to this too, and it's meant to enable secure cloud infrastructure. So sticking with that cloud theme of OpenStack today, we'll be talking about Core OS next week. And then on August 19th, Randall will be back from Iceland, and he'll hopefully be thawed out and ready to go to talk about NTP. Yes, of course, that's the Network Time Protocol. And Harlan Sten will be joining us to discuss what's going on with the Network Time Protocol. Maybe some things in there that you you know, don't always think about that might be interesting, or interesting implications of using the Network Time Protocol. And then on August 26th, we're going to be talking, I'm not even sure how to pronounce this one, Kubernetes. I don't know.
Kubernetes?
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, I think it's Kubernetes. That's not definitive. That's my take on it.
Okay, we'll go with that. Kubernetes, mm-hmm. I have no idea. But anyway, it's what it is, more importantly than what it's called, is it manages clusters of Linux containers as a single system to accelerate development and simplify operations, which is really important. DevOps is a big deal for a lot of us trying to get apps built and things like that. So it sounds like this is a project that could help there. And then September 2nd, we have another project that I'm not sure how to pronounce, FWNOP, maybe, or FWNOP.
You're on your own on that.
Okay.
Sorry,
okay.
You're right.
Well, I'll tell you this. I'll tell you what it stands for. How's that? It stands for the Firewall Knock Operator. And so it's meant to help implement authorization in your networks, especially SPA or single packet authorization. So that's coming up on September 2nd. Whew, that's what's coming up. Dan, anything you want to plug? I know there's at least one thing you want to plug.
Yeah. So very quickly, I just want to mention again, check out ogcamp.org. It's O-G-G-C-A-M-P. It's not all about audio formats and stuff. It's just the name is a legacy, should we say. But you can go to ogcamp.org, O-G-G-C-A-M-P.org. It's just a holding page at the moment, but tickets are going up later this week. So just check it out.
Awesome. Awesome. And where can people find you around the interwebs?
DanLynch.org, probably the best place. I'm quite active on Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus, not as much, but I try. Their integrations are a bit annoying sometimes. They don't work with some of the third parties as well. But anyway, that's a separate point. But yeah, if you go to DanLynch.org, it's all linked over there.
Yeah. Awesome. As far as myself is concerned, you can certainly find me on other programs around the Twit Network. We had a great discussion last night on All About Android with Jason, Ron, and the gang. Talked a lot about a new hardware that just came out or is coming out. So we had a great hardware discussion and some really good apps for you to check out. So definitely, if you didn't tune in live, now's your chance to go download All About Android and get my take on Dora the Explorer. And I'm just going to leave it at that. But you can follow me on Google Plus. I am active there. So I'm the opposite of Dan. I'm less active on Facebook and Twitter, although I use those tools, more active on Google Plus. You can find out about something I just posted last night, which is boot animations, Android boot animations that bring the TRS-80 color computer to your Android screen every time you boot it up. So go take a look at that and download those boot animations if you're interested in putting those on your phone. We're out of time, but you can follow us at Floss Weekly on Twitter. You can also follow us on Google Plus, also Floss Weekly. You can join the chat. We try to get questions in from the chat. We didn't have time to cover. We didn't have too many questions today, but we always try to bring those in if we can. That's at irc.twit.tv, and you can watch live at live.twit.tv. So be sure to tune in there. That's going to wrap it up for this edition of Floss Weekly. Flux Weekly, where we talk about
there's a new show called Fox Weekly, where we talk about Fox all the time. Maybe Fox Weekly? No, sorry. I mean the animals, say? not the media, you know, conglomerate, whatever.
Yeah, well,
I thought happening in Fox.
I thought I said flux. I thought we were going to get talk about plumbing and soldering, where you have
Flux Box, keeping flux it open source.
Could be an
Flux
could
box,
be an
window manager.
All right, we're going to wrap it up with that. We'll see you next time on Floss Weekly.